It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning, 10:06. On a holiday weekend, happy Independence Day. And I hope you enjoyed last night and the fireworks. And it cleared up so we could see fireworks, which is fantastic. And we're talking about Greece. And we're talking about Puerto Rico. And we're talking about trying to get some sort of security when it comes to retirement. And that's what we're trying to do here, as opposed to just buying some product that promises the world and promises and guarantees everything and there's no risk and it's safe. And we just got off the phone with a caller that it was asking about index annuities and how they sounded so great. And I gave you my opinion on that. I've written about it. I've talked about it a lot on the show. Obviously, I'm not a big fan of that. Of course, they do in some instances maybe work out. For some people, I think that I would, when I hear about these things, I absolutely run the other direction. Hey, that's just my take. 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. I want to give you some examples today about dividends and why I think that makes a lot of sense for investors. But we'll also go to the phones here. Let's start with, let's go to Rick, who joins us from Atlanta. Rick, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Thanks, Wes. Great show.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to ask your opinion on multi-asset diversified income ETFs.
That's a mouthful, Rick. It's probably less complicated than the title itself suggests, but do you have one in particular that you're looking at?
Yeah, I recently read an article on them. They recommended a few, but the one that they recommended primarily was MDIV. These ETFs invest in REITs, pipeline companies, and things like that. They pay monthly dividends. This one yields a little over 6%. Expenses are 0.67.
Okay, I just pulled it up. So it looks like, it is an ETF. Here we go. So this is an index of, the index comprises of securities classified as equities 20%, real estate 20%. So this is very much a basket. This is what I would call the alternative income bucket. That's where this goes as far as, what's inside of this. So let's go back to let me start over for a second, Rick. What really matters in any of these things is what's underneath the hood. So the ETF itself is just a vehicle, like a mutual fund's a vehicle, an index fund is a vehicle to house a basket of securities that may or may not work for you and your family. This particular strategy here, and this is new to me, I'm looking at it for the first time, investment, multi-asset diversified index fund is an exchange traded fund. So it's a good old fashioned ETF, which I like. I like ETFs as a structure in general because ETFs are usually very low cost. There's not a lot of trading inside an ETF, so you don't get a capital gain distribution. And the structure of ETFs has evolved from mutual funds and index funds to typically favor investors. So I like ETFs in general. And then I also like the underlying components here for when I talk about my main buckets that generate income. The growth bucket is really, that's a stock bucket, and that pays dividends. And the income bucket is really a bond bucket, and that pays interest. Various kinds of bonds pay interest. There's a third really important bucket that I deem as, and you could call this anything you want, me and the Money Matters team, we call it alternative income. And the reason I call it alternative income is because it doesn't come from necessarily traditional places like a stock or a bond. Think about the stock market's $17, $18 trillion in the U.S. and the bond market's $38 trillion in the United States. Just gigantic. So the income bucket and the growth bucket, they're gigantic. The alternative income bucket it's still big, but it's dwarfed by the two others. It's still really significant. And that's where you get all these areas that are kind of somewhere in between. So an MLP is a pipeline company or an energy storage company. Think of energy transfer partners. Think of enterprise products partners. Think of any of these big. Kinder Morgan is no longer an MLP, but that's kind of the most well-known pipeline and energy storage company. These are companies that pay out a pretty significant cash flow, but it's not a dividend. It's called a distribution. So it just legally has a slightly different structure. So it gets its own category. It's its own animal to some extent. But at the end of the day, these are areas that just pay some sort of cash flow. So MLPs do that. Real estate investment trusts, they pay out a cash flow. They trade very much like a stock, but they're slightly different legal structure. So I put them in that bucket. Closed-end funds, they pay out distributions. Put them in the bucket. So this alternative, effectively this ETF that you just asked about, and I know I'm literally bringing it up for the first time, so I don't have an opinion on it. I'm just giving you some facts behind it from what I'm reading. MDIV, it stands for Multi-Asset Diversified Income. It's an ETF that it's really effectively doing or trying to own and hold all those components in what I would call the alternative income bucket, the MLPs, REITs, high yield corporate debt. So there's a lot of preferred securities. These are all areas that have pretty high interest. They pay out very high current rates of interest, dividends, distributions. There's actually a lot of different components here. And that's what this is trying to do. It costs almost, so 67 basis points, call that 0.7. So almost 0.75%, little expensive, Rick, for an index fund or an ETF. It's a little expensive. And it looks like there's a lot going on inside of this ETF. You have all these different areas inside, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I noticed the very first and top one is the First Trust Tactical High Yield ETF. Another mouthful. Mm-hmm. And it's there. That is there. This is issued by First Trust. So it's, to some extent, you're starting to see with a lot of these ETFs what I wrote about many years ago called seven-layer dip, where there's lots of different, when you start investing in companies now, as opposed to the good old-fashioned traditional ETF, it's low-cost, basket of stocks or bonds, and it's real simple and it's really low-cost. Now you get these ETFs like this, that look, they're really, I don't know the difference between, there's not much difference in this ETF than an actively traded mutual fund, because you have all these different strategies going on at one time. One of the main components, 20% of this ETF, is another ETF that is also issued by the same company. Mm-hmm. So the strategy behind this and the concept behind this, I like, because I invest in a lot of these same areas. What I don't love here, and again, this is literally me looking at this for the first time, is that this is one of those ETFs that has drifted closer and closer and closer to an actively managed mutual fund. Lots of different underlying components. You've got an ETF within an ETF. The ETF within the ETF happens to be issued by the same company, so that they're funding their own products by you buying this other ETF. So you start to get this drift that goes from what is a good old-fashioned low-cost ETF with not a lot of transactions to what really looks just like a mutual fund cloaked in the disguise of an ETF. Because ETFs, I think, as far as investors are concerned, have a better connotation. But because they're doing so many different things inside of this one ETF, you're kind of taking away some of the real positives, I think, of why we buy ETFs in the first place. So in concept, I like it. This is not the kind of ETF that I would own individually. What I would rather see you do is you take these same really important areas, MLPs, high yield bonds, preferred stocks. These are all important areas, REITs, real estate investment trusts. All these areas are important, I think, for income-oriented investors to own. Mm-hmm. I would get a more streamlined ETF for each one. So I would have one MLP ETF and one or two high yield bond ETFs, and really keep knowing that particular ETF is dedicated to that one particular strategy.
Uh-huh.
And you get you can find the best, lowest cost versions of each one of those really important areas, as opposed to one that gets a little complicated. And it looks like the water just gets a little muddy here. And it's getting to be kind of expensive. You're getting close to 1% fee, which all of a sudden starts to sound a lot like an actively traded mutual fund cost, which that's the whole reason we want to do ETFs to begin with, is to lower our costs. So good in concept. I don't know if this is the best way to execute it. But Rick, I think you're absolutely at least on the right track when it comes to looking for another way to generate more income.
Thanks a lot, Wes. I appreciate your help.
All right, great. Have a great rest of your Sunday. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio, or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And I want to give an example. When we get back, we'll talk about a particular company, and we'll look at the relationship between, hey, when rates go up, this is what the yield looks like. When rates go down, this is what... Let me rephrase this. If my cash flow stays the same, or my dividend payment from a company stays the same, and the price goes down, that means my yield goes up. All of a sudden, it starts to maybe become interesting. Vice versa, though, when the price goes way up, same cash flow has a lower and lower yield. It's a little less attractive. So I want to run through those numbers and look at a real life dividend stock example and why it might make some sense for you to take a look at. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Find me and the Money Matters team online, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS. I just posted an article we referred to about what I call the can't lose, in quotes, annuity trap on my Facebook page, Wes Moss Money Matters. And we'll be back straight ahead. News, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Let's give you an example here. We've been talking about income and dividends today. Here's a good old-fashioned example of a dividend-paying utility company. You all know the company if you're in the Southeast, and that's Southern Company. So Southern owns retail electric companies, or that's the parent company for Alabama Power, Georgia Power, Gulf Power, Mississippi Power. We're talking about 120,000 square miles in four different states. So the question here is that this is a company that's been around since 1945. They've been paying dividends since 1972. And they've never cut the dividend, and they've had growth in it since 2002. Today, it yields about a little over 5%. The key, though, is that, and I always, I draw this out when I'm talking to families that when we're talking about dividends and the relationship between the price and the yield, or the cash flow and what it equals when it comes to a yield. I think of you buy 1,000 shares as a really easy, quick example. At $45, and this is Southern Company today pays $2.17 a share. Let's go back and round the numbers out just a little bit. So before they raised the dividend pretty recently, it was $2.10 a share. So thousand shares at $45 pays $2.10 a share. That means that 1,000 shares will pay you $2,100 a year, but it costs you $45 a share, or $45,000. So you take your cash flow, $2,100, divided by what it cost, $45,000. That means you have a yield, simple math, of just 4.7%. Pretty significant yield. If the price goes up to $50, it still pays the same amount until they raise the dividend. So in my example, they're still paying you $2,100. But if you were to have to rebuy that stock today, it'd be $50,000. Now, the current yield for new investors is 4.2%. So it dropped. The price went up, cash flow stayed the same, and the yield went down. So new investors at that new price that's higher would be getting about 4.2%. But here's the catch, or not the catch, but here's the a little bit of the safety net with these good dividend paying companies, and Southern is a good example of this, is that when the price drops, as long as the yield stays, the cash flow stays the same, then your yield goes higher and higher and higher. So now let's say the stock drops all the way to 40, which is similar to what's happened today. It's a little above that. Now 1,000 shares would cost you 40,000, not 50. And it still pays $2,100 a year because the dividend's the same, $2.10. Now do the same math, $2,100 a year and it cost you $40,000 to buy it. Now the yield, because the price has come down, now the yield's gone up to 5.25%. So that is where more and more investors get interested when you have a company that may be dropping in price because of the overall economic environment, like Southern Company or a lot of utility companies have. It's not necessarily that something that Southern's doing. It's that all utilities have come down because interest rates have been signaled. They've started to go up a little bit, and they're signaled to go up. So it has hit the prices of pretty much anything interest rate sensitive. What starts to get more and more interesting to new investors that don't own a company like Southern already or utilities already is that now, a year ago, the yield was only a little over 4. Today, it's over 5. Now, it starts to get pretty darn interesting. And that's when you see new money come in and start to put a little bit of a floor or a base under these dividend-paying stocks because of the cash flow and because of the yield. And that is that's why this is a really important example for us as income investors to understand when it comes to retirement. We get a little bit of some price stability, and we get some cash flow that's ever so important when it comes to you generating more income when you're in retirement and your money has to last and last. You're listening to Money Matters. Find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic. Then more right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. Live on this Sunday morning, Independence Day weekend. I hope you're enjoying the weekend. It's actually nice and cool this morning. 71, 72 degrees right now in Peachtree. First time in a long time, I remember, where it's kind of nice outside. It's actually kind of nice. This is where you want to be in the mountains. This is all of those listening from Blue Ridge or where Big Canoe, if you're up there a little bit north and you're in the mountains, a little elevation, you guys, you are the smart ones. My first trip this summer is going to be to Michigan. I'm going all the way. And I'm not just going to Holland, where I typically go, which is on the coast. It's to the western coast of Michigan, right on Lake Michigan. But the Leland is all the way up north. You've got to go all the way up north or along Lake Michigan. You get to a place called Traverse City, Michigan. And then even north of that is this little place called Leland, which I've only been to for one day in my life. And I always remember that. In fact, I think this was probably when I was engaged. I don't think Lynn and I were even married. So go 12, 13, 14 years ago when we went on a trip to Traverse City and we took a day trip to Leland. I just saw those photos. You know how it's so fun to look at old photos and you feel like you look like a child. I look like a child 15 years ago. So much. Well, we all look at that. We think, oh, it's so nice to be so young. But anyway, this was back in Leland, and it hopefully will be 75 as a high at the most. We'll see. We've got prize WSB McDonald's weekend prize pack. Why don't we just do that real quick, Scott Maxim? We'll get that out. We'll get that going.
Sure.
Prize line 404-741-0750. So my question is, well, Scott, what's the prize pack, first of all?
Well, what we have here is a bunch of good stuff. A pair of tickets to see Rod Stewart in concert on July 15th at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. A pair of tickets to see Idina Menzel in concert on July 24th at Chastain Park Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. And a pair of tickets to see Toby Keith in concert on July 30th at Aaron's Amphitheater at Lakewood, produced by Ford F-Series. I have no value, but all three of those concerts, that's a priceless pack.
Yeah, sounds pretty good to me. Thanks, man. Well, okay, so what company agreed to pay $18.7 billion to settle all federal and state claims related to something big that happened in 2010? That's the WSB McDonald's Weekend question, trivia question. And, of course, I'll tweet that out on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, as I am, which is kind of fun, I don't hate Twitter anymore. I used to hate Twitter. It's not a terrible thing. I might even like Twitter more than Facebook. That's not saying a huge amount, but the my Twitter handle at WesMoss365, which is at, that's a little at sign, WESMOSS 365. The WSB McDonald's weekend prize back prize line 404-872. No, I'm sorry, 404, that's a regular line. The prize line 404-741-0750. So let's talk about, we know that we are voting today. The Greek people, as we speak, are voting on a referendum to see whether they stay, effectively take concessions or not. It means whether they stay in the euro or not. We're not going to know the results until Monday. The consensus on Wall Street is that the Greek people vote to stay in the euro. They vote for concessions because they're afraid to go back to the drachma, which does sound, it's a scary sounding currency, isn't it? The drachma. But to some extent, it is interesting that it would be interesting and relatively surprising to me that a population will vote for higher taxes and vote for cutting pensions and vote for lower government spending, and it seems as though that is counterintuitive to the interest of a culture over basically a socialism type culture that is in Greece. So it'll be there are folks that dedicate their lives to Greek politics. I do not. So to some extent, I have to take I'm going to take their advice, though, with a grain of salt. I really would be surprised if we get a yes vote, which means that they make concessions and then they get new bailout money and everything's hunky-dory in Greece. I just don't see that happening. But we'll know, and we'll know very soon. This saga or drama will certainly, after the vote on Sunday, which is today, then we'll know Monday, then there'll probably be another month of wrangling, and then I think hopefully we'll get some resolution one way or another by the end of July when it comes to Greece. 75% chance probability of that. The other 25% chance we continue to be in this purgatory no man's land for another year or two to come. So we know about Greece, and we know about that it's put a cap on the market because there's the worry about further contagion. The contagion would be into Europe because there's very little ownership of anything Greek as far as the market, stock market or the bond market here in the United States, except for some select hedge funds. But most of that, almost all of the exposure is Europe. And I still don't believe that a country of that size could have a real negative impact on the European Union and their economy as a whole. So then we move to something else, which is another scenario that deals with debt and overborrowing and not having the ability to pay back, and that's Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rican bonds crashed this week. Puerto Rico in debt, $72 billion. So because their bonds took a huge hit, 5% one day, 6% the next, now the yields on those bonds are very much like junk bonds, even though they are technically municipal bonds from Puerto Rico, they're yielding over 12%. So their governor, Alejandro Garcia Padilla, says that the billion, so they owe this $72 billion, and it costs them just to service the debt about 15% of their total budget. Puerto Rico itself, their GDP, total GDP is about $100 billion. I went to try to get some perspective on what that GDP means. So $103 billion GDP, you could take the state of Wyoming and the state of Rhode Island. And those two, the economic output of those two combined, that's the same size as Puerto Rico. So it's obviously not a huge economy at all. Yet they owe $72 billion in debt. So that's more debt than every single U.S. state except for California and New York. So cost them 15% of the budget. They did make the July 1st payment, so they're not technically in default just yet. But again, another story that we obviously need to be watching is what's happening in Puerto Rico. So this is debt catching up with the world, and July is a month where a lot of this is coming home to roost. Where it's coming home to roost in Greece, it's coming home to roost in Puerto Rico, And it shows, it's still the hangover of this financial crisis that we, even though it's been six full years now, and we got to go back to 06 when this really started, and 07 when it hit. And 08 was kind of the darkest hours, and early 09 when the market just started to bottom. But here we are in the middle of 2015. So we're talking years and years later. The reason that a lot of us can't move on and we still have the psyche of how bad things were back then is that we continue to see these are results of that same overborrowing from many, many years ago. It didn't just happen. Puerto Rico didn't just get into this mess over the last few months. Greece, we've been talking about this Greek mess for the last 5 years, but it didn't happen over the last 5 years. It happened over the last decade. So these are really long problems that have manifested and, well, let's say they've smoldered for a long period of time, and now they're coming home to roost. And that's why we obviously here in the United States have to keep an eye on the debt that we have here. We can always service the debt as long as we grow and as long as we continue to move forward economically. But when we start going in the other direction, like we did in the Great Recession of 07 and 08, then you start to get this very nervous feeling about, hey, well, what's the difference between us and Greece? The ratios are not that dissimilar. It's really about, yeah, we owe a lot more debt, but we're a much bigger economy. It really is just a matter of, can we service the debt and can we continue to grow out of it? And if we can't, we end up just like we end up just like Puerto Rico. We end up just like Greece. Now, we're nowhere close to that today. We are not on the precipice of going into a big economic black hole or another Great Depression. We have a very solid economy. It's a B+ economy right now, if I had to grade it. There are plenty of things that are going right. Demographically, things are actually in our favor, and that says a lot. You get countries like Japan where demographics are going absolutely backwards. They're a shrinking population. They're a dramatically aging population. So they have less and less workforce to continue to grow, less and less population to continue to grow. That's a country that has significant challenges and headwinds over the next decade. Here, as long as, and this goes back to, it's funny, investing to me, as complicated as the world is and interconnected globally as it is, it really comes back to a couple really important fundamental principles that have to be in place, or else I wouldn't have the belief that we should invest in any country. And that's the underlying economic tide of demographics and earnings growth and the thought and the understanding, it's an understanding, that the pie gets bigger. If you talk to Warren Buffett, we talk about how much of a genius he is. He effectively has gone back to one underlying guiding principle, and that's the pie gets bigger. The economic pie has to get bigger in order for companies to do well. And it has continued to do so here in America. And we still have demographics in our favor, and we still have innovation in America to make things more efficient, to have companies continue to raise the standard of living in America for a low cost and increase the amount of money they earn in any given year. If you had a population that's sliding backwards, you can't do that. But we do have a population that continues to grow, and we have innovation. And those two, the combination of those two allow us to move forward so that we don't end up like Greece and we don't end up like Puerto Rico on a much bigger scale. And that's the whole component. Those are the reasons behind why I still have the great conviction that over time, investing in U.S. markets is still a really good place to be. It's frustrating at times, like this year, basically flat markets, and we have areas that are actually net negative on the year in price. But we're not doing this for 6 months. We're doing this for 6 years and 60 years, or 10 years and 20 years and 30 years. So as long as we have patience and we continue to find good, fundamentally sound companies to invest in, or baskets of companies, ETFs or index funds to invest in, then we have a bright future ahead of us for the next decade here in the U.S., despite the headlines of Greece, despite the headlines of what's happening around the world in Puerto Rico and debt. There is a very bright picture ahead. With that, we've got to go a quick break. News, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We got a lot coming up this week here. Start of earnings season. So Wednesday, Alcoa officially, well, unofficially, kicks off earnings season. Then we start on Thursday. We see results from Pepsi and Walgreens. So we've got to have an economy or a stock market that increases earnings. That's the mother's milk of the stock market. And we can, at some point, if we can have fundamental earnings growth in America and the economic chime of consumer and housing and interest rates and manufacturing and earnings and employment all go in the right direction, then we can put things like Greece behind us and we can put things like Puerto Rico behind us. But in the meantime, we've got to get to something new to take control of the news cycle. And maybe it's earnings season that's coming up. Maybe it is companies that start to show that the consumer and lower gas prices and higher housing prices, maybe we can start to see the economic tide turn and have enough horsepower to overpower the uphill battle that we find in Greece and around the world. So we'll see if that happens. Let's stay tuned for that. Let's enjoy this nice, calm, and cool Independence Day weekend. A whole nother day left of that. Enjoy the rest of this day. Thank you so much for being with us here on the show. Want to find me and the Money Matters team? Easy to do so. WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Or you can email me and the Money Matters team, radio, RADIO, at yourwealth.com, YOURwealth.com. Enjoy, play it safe, enjoy the family, and we'll see you next Sunday for more Money Matters with me, Wes Moss, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.